Hi there. My name is Sam Smeltzer, and I'm an HR healer, and you're listening to The Heart of It podcast, where we chat about what's at the heart and matters most in the world of HR, the people. In this episode, I'm so pumped because I'm bringing to you someone who has not just been a guest, but has very fortunately, I'm so blessed to now call this person my friend. Jeff Harry is back, and we are talking about a topic that still needs our attention more than ever as we are uncovering all these things as a result of 2020. Another topic that is bubbling to the surface is regarding gender. And so we're going to talk about gender bias in the workplace. So you don't want to miss this. This is an awesome, awesome conversation. So I'm so happy you're here to hear me and Jeff unpack this together. So before we get to that, I just have to make sure that I keep you in the loop and let you know what is going on here at the Heart Center. Coming up on April 14th, we are launching our first ever virtual cohort small group coaching program called the Disengagement Detox. Why do you need a detox? Because HR is not immune to disengagement. In fact, we absorb it at a higher rate because we have to navigate all of it in the workplace. All the things that you've been taking on in 2020 has resulted in you absorbing an enormous amount of crap. Let's detox it. Let's remove it from the system with my disengagement detox that fuses medical Qigong methods for 8 weeks. Join me. Check it out. leadershipisart.com/detox for more info. Now, enough about that. Let's get to this awesome convo with Jeff. All right, let's do this. Hello there, and welcome to this episode of the Heart of It podcast. I am so excited that you are taking time out of your day to join us, and I am thrilled because today I have a repeat guest, my new good friend, courtesy of this season, Mr. Jeff Harry. Jeff, say hi.
What's up?
So I'm really excited about today because last time you came on and our main task was to introduce you to the world, and now we don't have to talk about that, and I will post your first episode in the show notes because now we can actually talk about like some real stuff rather than, you know, like the initial resume and why you are legit able to be a guest on the podcast.
Oh, goodness.
So Jeff is got all kinds of topics that he speaks on that I hinted at last time that I would love to process. And I'm sure just from our dynamics, he's probably going to be coming back a lot and we'll be slowly unpacking a lot of those things. But today we're going to talk about a P word, which is privilege, which has been talked about a lot this past year. But I love that today we're going to focus on gender a little bit. Because I don't think that I think we still talk about gender. But the last year, Black Lives Matter has been the focus and it should be the focus. But there are other things that are still underlying, too, that we cannot forget about as well. And so, Jeff, today we're going to talk about this. If you correct me if I'm wrong, but we're going to talk about privilege from the male aspect.
Yeah.
And why don't you just... why don't you lead us in on this conversation?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, part of this was inspired by a workshop I put together with my friend Humaira, which we applied to South by Southwest with, which they didn't accept. But it was called Dudes Do Better. And it was like moving your organization, making your organization thrive through addressing your privilege, right? And really what that workshop was about wasn't even just about men. It was about startup culture and how a lot of men in startup culture are like, hey, let me change the world. Hey, let me do all these amazing things. Let me have this huge impact on the world. But then when you look at it afterwards, you're like, you haven't had any impact. Like, if anything, you've just kind of stroked your ego. You know, in that very WeWork, very Jeff Bezos, very Elon Musk sort of way where you've treated employees in a really toxic way. And then deified yourself or made yourself look like the hero in all this, right? Even in that Gary Vaynerchuk way, as we were talking about earlier, just like, you know, there's such the celebration of like a Steve Jobs character. And he was like, he was abusive to his employees. Jeff Bezos is the same way. And what's crazy is at the beginning, Jeff was not like that. In 1998, he wasn't. Like, he was a nerd just like everybody else. And people used to hang out with him because it was like he was, the future's where the fun is. And that was the fun place to be. But what happened? Like, what happened with all these organizations where you know, now we're celebrating a lot of masculine leadership traits that are not healthy anymore, right? That maybe were normal before the pandemic, but going after the pandemic shouldn't be anymore. And what I mean by some masculine traits of leadership are like competitive, assertive, independent, monotask, like a bias for action. Like we always have to take action. When frankly, you know, and I just made a video about this, you know, a lot of the feminine leadership traits that people take on are actually really needed right now, like compassion, like collaboration, like play, which I talk a lot about, like being intuitive, like having patience and forgiveness. And if you want to see what the impact is when you find someone that is able to balance feminine and masculine leadership, look at the Prime Minister of New Zealand. You know, Prime Minister Ardern, I believe is her name. She was both able to, you know, be goal-oriented and task-oriented, but she was also very transparent and very compassionate and very patient as she went through the process, and but led from both realms. And that is why they had the lowest COVID rates in the world. It's like she was very clear with her citizens at the beginning. We're locking down. We're going to be here for a certain period of time. I know this is really hard on you, so we're going to actually give you X amount of money to hold on to your businesses where you can work at home, all those things, you know, and then we're going to be out of this. And now they have zero COVID cases. So this is what we need to be looking at as we get into this new normal of not simply celebrating masculine leadership anymore, because it's actually been very detrimental to our culture.
So I find this fascinating because you hinted at this, what happens, because a lot of these individuals that you highlighted, like a Steve Jobs or, you know, they began, you know, as a normal person before ego got really big, and what happened in that time frame. And I think that's really interesting, because here's a fun fact that you probably don't know about me, but a couple of years ago, my organization tried to do a men's conference that allowed and empowered men to explore some of these, I would say, more feminine leadership qualities. And as part of that event to launch it, I went and met with local community leaders that were men to try to gain support, because it was a new concept, right? Or a newer concept. A lot of Brené Brown kind of work, yeah, kind of idea. And I had a lot of leaders laugh, like these accomplished leaders, men, laugh at me. And I said, okay, well, tell me, if I were to design an ideal conference that you would attend, what would that be? And they were all like, oh, around my legacy, what I have accomplished and what I can leave behind and what I can mentor other people. So it was this strictly me, 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 me. Yep. And I kind of loosely wrote it down. But I know some of these people a while ago, and they were not at this level, and they weren't that ego driven, yeah, shall I say, nicely. What do you think happens in that time frame? What evolution happens in this workspace that gets them there?
I think what happens is there's a bros club that is created. There's a toxic masculine bros club where bad behavior celebrates bad behavior. There's like this frat house type feel to it where you know. So I recently heard this. This was hilarious. So someone was like, you know, what's up with all these diversity hires? They were saying something like this on Twitter. And someone responded and was just like, what's up with all these homogeneity hires? Because it's just like, we're constantly hiring people that look just like us. Like, we don't question that ever, right? So let's say, you know, an Elon Musk type guy or a Gary Vaynerchuk type guy hires someone just like him, then that guy's going to hire another person just like him and just like him and just like him. And then there's a celebration of this bro-ness, you know, and then you're just like, oh, you know, that guy just is, you know, he's just a great guy. It's like, no, you hired him because he thinks just like you, right? So, and what happens is then you start acting with a certain level of bad behavior, and anyone else that comes into that culture afterwards doesn't check you on it because they're like, oh, is this the culture of the organization? Oh, okay, I guess this is how we're doing things. And then it just gets worse and worse and worse. And what you need to do, and this is what I do in my How to Deal with A-Holes at Work Through Play workshop that I run with my friend Gary Ware, is like you have to stop and call out that bad behavior really early on. Because if not, it runs amok, it permeates throughout the whole organization, and then other people go, wait a minute, that A-hole, that toxic person is being celebrated. That person keeps getting promoted. So I should act that way. And then you can even, then you sometimes even see women acting in more masculine leadership ways just to compete with all these guys that are also doing this. So like, it's just, there should always be balance. And right now we're way too on the toxic masculine side, that it's super dangerous. And you're seeing it in even our politics. You're just seeing it in a lot of ways where we're not even able to have conversations anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's been my argument recently, even in the HR realm, that masculinity has taken over. I mean, where our area of focus is compliance, regulation, that is what the top priority is, rather than the elements of play, which are team building, people development, having empathy, right, caring and doing what's right for the people, which we're seeing that coming out of, I shouldn't say coming up and navigating this pandemic. I mean, you see some organizational decisions where you're like, do you realize that you deal with people, not robots?
Right. It's so weird because think about what HR now is. It's CYA stuff all the time. It's all like, how do we not get sued? And it's like, is that the strategy? Like, is that what we should be answering? Shouldn't HR be about how do we make sure that people can communicate? How do we make sure there's a psychologically safe environment for us to work? How do we navigate hard conversations? Shouldn't we be doing that? Because actually that would prevent less lawsuits than right now what you're doing, where you're like just adding more compliance and more like, well, we got to put more stuff in the contract that we write so that this thing doesn't happen. It's just like, man, come on. We're it's so fear-based right now. And it's just like, it's not healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of us are trained in HR to have those conversations, because I will legit have coaching sessions with executive leaders and say, you know, here's the whole answer of why we should do and what we should do. But then they're like, well, yeah, but tell me the risk or the liability. And I can spew, okay, well, here, let's translate to monetary value. And I can also tell you how to limit getting sued, because that is how we've been talking. Like, that's linguistically, is that the right word? But that's how we're chit-chatting. So there are all these articles coming out, because I went to go try to find the one that I read and then realized there's like 20 of them. So it's not one news outlet that put it out, but several, about how they're classifying this recession being basically the first female recession in our economy.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that's really interesting, putting that together with this being a very dangerous time with the heavy level of masculinity. And now they're saying that because of virtual school or other maternal responsibilities, that a lot of women had to take a couple step back, and it's really setting the female gender back. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that dynamic added to talking about privilege and masculinity, leadership traits, like, as an employer, I mean, what should I be mindful of? Because these things are filled with stories of women stepping back after they've tried to talk to their employer.
Yeah.
And their employer basically showing no empathy. Yeah. And they basically have no choice and they have to do what they have to do.
Well, first off, it's sad. Can we just acknowledge the fact that this is ridiculously sad. Wait, what? What? Men? There was more men that got jobs and women? It's only women that, like, just the fact that it's so stark, we really have to be questioning what is wrong with our workforce these days? Like, what is the wrong with our culture that we are celebrating again a certain gender and punishing another one based off of like patriarchal stuff from the 1950s? Like, are we still operating in that way? Like, I think that's where we have to reflect on. If I'm in HR in a certain organization, I need to be asking myself, what values does my organization actually put into practice and not just BS about, right? Because there's a lot of people that are like, oh, we're for maternity leave. Are you? Really? Are you? Are you for paternity and maternity leave? Are you for making sure that you have a diverse workforce? And also, something I would ask team leaders is, do you realize what you are missing when you do not have gender diversity in your teams? Like, I give this example all the time. You know, when I worked for this other organization, I remember talking to this engineer. She was like this ridiculously smart engineer that used to work for a biomedical company. And she's in a meeting with a bunch of them, and they're trying to figure out a stent, like how to make a new stent, you know, for arteries. And she's just like, why don't we just use like the same idea as a scrunchie? And all these dudes in the room, because it's only dudes, were like, what's a scrunchie? And she just like pulls it out and shows them. That became a patent, right? Like, that's just one of so many ridiculous ideas of genius women that are like bringing people to the moon and stuff like that, right? That are doing these things that we are completely ignoring because we want to keep a homogenous society. I was at a company that works with airlines, and I walked by a meeting and it was all dudes. It was like, there should not be a meeting anymore in America where the top executives are just men. Like, this is just like, it's so antiquated. And it's, I'm not saying this just for a diversity thing. No, you're losing like the ability to adapt and be resilient. You know, some of the most important traits of successful organizations during 2020 have been feminine leadership traits, right? Relationship directed, intuitive, collaborative, interdependent, multitasking, levels of patience, compassion, all of those things. The companies that are doing this, the teams that are doing this, have the least amount of turnover, have some of the highest revenues, you know, and they're organizations that most people want to work for. So why are you trying to go back to 1950? It's over. You know, if you want to be Blockbuster, then go ahead and choose that. But everyone else, the new normal is for us to not be discriminating anymore based off of gender.
You know, there, way back when I was an undergraduate studying HR for the first time, my textbook talked about the benefits of hiring outside versus internal promotion. And one of the things it cautioned to was this concept that they called organizational inbreeding, which has stuck itself in my brain, but has a whole nother meaning when we think about it in these terms, like with these rooms that you're walking past that are all men. If they're all white men, if they're all white men of a certain age, I mean, I just had this conversation with my husband and my dad the other day about politically looking at the House of Representatives and the senators and the age range and the gap between a younger politician and an older politician because of the terms you know, we're lacking that diversity. Will we have some of these huge gaps? Like, yeah. Would it be a more natural kind of evolution? Like, things seem so progressive or extreme because you've been isolated from those ideas for so long.
I remember hiring a person and, you know, I won't use his real name, but, you know, but let's just go with Chad. Let's say his name was Chad. And he was hiring people that literally had the same name as him. And I'm like, stop hiring that guy. Like, can you evolve from this? And then even when I would watch him run some leadership trainings, I would just be like, there's a large gender bias right here. Not even only in how you've hired, but how you're even allowing certain people to interact. And I had to call him out on his stuff because I was like, dude, you're only letting all the dudes talk in the room. You're like not even creating a psychologically safe space for anyone else to feel comfortable to share. So it's like you're missing out on so much and you think like it's not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that if you take that concept combined with this whole bromance fraternity thing that you kind of hinted at, you know, you have now these layers that are holding back ideas, trying to protect who is the ultimate kind of senior leader. And it just, man, that just, it just like, as someone who does organizational development work, you're just, and you come in and you're like, fix my culture.
You're like, exactly. You're like, I can't. Because it's
like in a 6-hour session.
Yeah, it's 4 layers deep of toxic people. And also, and I would challenge anyone that's listening to this where you're like, oh, well, I'm a strong leader. If you feel insecurity about building up your team so that they can take your job, then you are not that good, not that strong of a leader. Like, you should be organizing yourself out of a job all the time. And if you're feeling insecure because there is a woman that is smarter than you, that has more of her stuff together, and she just so happened to not be promoted, but you have been, then you really have to look at that and be like, am I really qualified to be here? I mean, it's a hard question to ask, but, you know, every man, including myself, have to ask, like, why did I get the job that I got? Like,
yeah.
Did I get it simply because another guy hired me? When I think about it, for some of the jobs I had, yeah, it was because, and to think now that I knew women that were sometimes more qualified to take that job, but instead they picked a guy or they picked me, like, we have to own that. We got to own that certain level of privilege and be like, now that I'm in a position of power, how do I change this? Right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not just changing it just for PC reasons, because I'm tired. I'm just so tired of listening to dudes being like, oh, people are trying to cancel us. They're trying to cancel the culture. It's just like, oh, the Me Too movement. Now I can't say anything to women. Wait, what? Wait, what do you mean you can't say anything? You just can't say anything sexist. Is that hard? Is that so hard? That you can't say anything to harass them? Like, is that so, I feel like I'm walking on eggshells. That's because you've been so toxic for so long that now you're like, this is unfair. I can't be me. Well, guess what? Your me is over. It's over. Like, that old, like, catcalling construction BS style of communicating with other genders has to stop. And then on top of that, you have to own your privilege and be like, how do I change this? And ultimately, the other part that's really hard for a lot of people that are in positions of privilege is recognize I have to give up power. Like, mm-hmm. There's no win-win here. You know, as Anand Girdagos says a lot, there's no win-win. You, as the person of privilege, have to give up power in order to bring other people to have power.
Yeah. I was so excited that I was able to find this article for our conversation today, because this goes back to when I was preparing for this conference. Back in 2017, there was an article that came out from Harvard Business Review in regards to gender that said why sexual harassment persists and what organizations can do to stop it. And this was, you know, when #MeToo was really what was happening. But there's this one piece in here that really caught my attention. It says, to eliminate sexual harassment, we must first understand that it means that it is a means of enforcing and regulating social status, mm-hmm. not a product of mismanaged sexual desires. Mm-hmm. Scholars have found in psychology labs, as well as in large data sets, that men sexualize female coworkers as a way to keep them in their place, doing air quotes because that's what the article does, mm-hmm. especially when they feel that women are outperforming them in mm-hmm. traditionally masculine domains. Mm-hmm. And researchers have found that women who deviate from gender norms by working in a male-dominated industry exhibiting traditionally masculine personality characteristics, or simply being in supervisory roles are especially likely to experience harassment. So everything that Jeff just said, here, the Harvard Business Review. And I've looked for this article for years, and it just magically appeared today.
And what's so divinely interesting is they receive a certain level. I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
No, go ahead.
Yeah. Not only are they receiving a certain level of sexual harassment, but then here's the ironic part. By them showing certain masculine leadership tendencies, by them being assertive, by them being like solution oriented, by them being action oriented, then they're called the B word. You know, it's just like, then they're called like, ugh, she's just horrible. And it's just like, wait a minute, you just celebrated this other guy for being a go-getter and taking risks and like no nonsense. And then she does the exact same thing. And it's just like, yeah, she's just horrible. We can't promote her because she's super toxic. Like, look at her. Like, all the guys don't like her. Why don't all the guys like her? Because she's smarter than you. Because you're feeling insecure. Because she should have had your job a while ago. She should be running this organization, but none of us want to talk about that. So instead, we're going to attack her character because that's much easier than owning the fact that, like, she should have been promoted a long time ago and should be running this organization.
It's interesting, as you were talking, I know there was another study that was done with career coaches, and when they work with women and the difference between women and men. But men, basically, when they look for jobs to apply for, if they're kind of like within range of the qualifications, they're going to apply.
Oh, absolutely. Like,
where a woman will basically dissect the lines of qualification, and I'm talking about women loosely because, you know, there's always exceptions to this, but will basically disqualify themselves without ever actually applying. And I know that I've coached women several times to say, you have to apply, because the reality is there's other people who don't have the qualifications applying and putting them in the pot. And if I don't have anybody that meets my ideal, I'm going through those applications and you're not there.
Dude, the amount of times have you seen this? It's on t-shirts now. Please give me the confidence of a mediocre white man. Like, dude. The amount of confidence I have come across from mediocre dudes. And it's just like, you don't even know what you're talking about. But you're just showing up with such a high level of confidence for yourself. I just saw someone, a friend of mine, just laid off this guy, or I think she fired him, and he reapplied to another job at the same company. Like, he was that, he never thought it was a problem. Like, he never thought it was him. He was just like, oh, maybe they just didn't like me. But like, you know, but there's other people like me. I was just like, man, if I could have... My friend Ludovic once said that. He's just like, if I could have, he's like this black dude. He's like, if I could have the confidence of a white dude, I would be like CEO right now of many organizations. You know, so like, yes, I and I'm communicating this, you know, not just for women, but just also for people of color, because they do the same thing. I'm just like, am I qualified? Am I not qualified? And it's just like, dude, we need to be applying to everything. And then for HR people, and this is something that's super sad. I ran a workshop with my friend Tashawn called How to Not Be Racist at Work by Accident. And one of the studies we did was about resumes and how they're still discriminating based off of the name of a resume. But they matched up studies they did in the 80s to now. No change. The same level of discrimination of like a Tyrone or a Lakeisha versus a Rick or a Samantha with the exact same resume, just the name. So like HR, like you have a role in this. You have like, are you complicit? Like we have to ask the hard question. Are we complicit in continuing this toxic masculine work culture? Or am I picking candidates that I believe bring a certain level of diversity that this company frankly needs? Now, those leaders might be like, oh, you keep sending me all these people. I don't like these people. But then you as an HR person has to be like, why don't you like those people? Is it because it's not like your friend Chad? Do they not go to the same college as you? Because there's a reason I'm deliberately doing this, because you need more diversity in your team.
You know, and it's so fascinating to start with something as simple as somebody's name, which is, you know, the first way that we claim our identity. And I can even, and I will own this, you know, back when I first started in HR, not that I was intentionally trying to discriminate, but if you had an application with a name that I did not know how to pronounce or say, the being uncomfortable, the idea of trying to call yep. and feel like I'm going to be stupid yep. was enough for you to shift. Yep. So I, you know, if you're in HR and you have been, did that, and then somehow it's transformed and turned into a habit, that, because that's how these things like start to evolve and build. Like we need to get curious about how we're sorting applications.
Right.
And because I also know I've been in places where we're sorting through 300 and you got to go through them very quickly. We have, you know, software now that does it a little faster that hopefully should help us out. But we have to get curious about that. You know, when we talk about race and gender and any kind of discrimination, the systems as they exist today are generating bias because they were built with people that had privilege. And so somebody has to step up and think about things differently.
Yeah. And also remember, all of that unconscious bias is also coming from so much of like our media, our social media. So we don't even know how it's actually affecting us when we're at work. We think we're being not biased, but we're always being biased in one way or another. So a question that has come up for me that I have never understood is why, well, first off, where do you think HR leans? Do you think it's more male or more female? Is, let me not assume.
I think naturally, I mean, it's falling more male, and I can say that because we've been doing this assessment called What's Your HR Personality? And it has a masculine personality there, and about 70% of the hundreds that we have surveyed in the last 2 years are on that masculine personality.
Oh, interesting. So, but is the makeup of an HR team more male or is it more female usually in your experience?
Oh, you mean like actually male or female?
Actually, yeah, like amount of men. To
yeah, like actual women. Gender.
Yeah.
They are actually mostly female. We went through a brief period of time where they definitely were recruiting from military. Like there was a period of time where all these men came to, I don't know if it was like a military retirement, but there was a influx of men. But now it is predominantly female. Now at the college level, I'm seeing more men. So I would say that, you know, that doesn't really have to... But if you went to an HR conference, you're going to be surrounded by a lot of women. It's like the equivalent of nursing, the frequency
then,
that you see a man.
My question then is, why is that the case? What? Yeah, why?
Well, I mean, historically, you know, the leaders that we've talked about that are focused on those masculine toxicity leadership traits put HR in a bucket where they are basically... the wife of the organization from a 1950s kind of mentality.
That's
you're the party
true.
Planner. You plan the potlucks. You
that's true.
You make people feel better. You're the office you go to when you want to cry. You know, that's, and then we have to prove our value because that was the bucket we were placed in. And then it's like, well, how do you make us any money? Do you really do anything for us? And then we start developing these masculine tendencies of compliance and regulation and. The HR industry and profession overall, the evolution of it is quite fascinating to watch the dynamics of that masculine and that female energy kind of intertwine.
That's so interesting because it's so layered. I think of one of my former organizations I worked with, and we referred to HR as like the mothership, and there was like the mother of the organization. Yet, just like, I guess, a mom, she had to clean up everyone else's mess.
That's a great way to
it's
put it.
It's just
that's
so
totally
crazy,
true.
Right? She has to clean up all their everyone's mess. She gets no, she doesn't get as much credit. She doesn't get paid as much, right? As like, you know, she's not, she's part of the leadership team, but she's not still, she's not as high up as a lot of these, as like, you know, the guy that was like the top IT guy or the top curriculum guy or the top whatever it is. And it's like, what are we doing? This person, and I would say this all the time, this person and her staff, if she disappeared tomorrow, this company's over. Like, it's over. So why? Like, I think we have to, if you're in HR and you're listening to this, you have to look at how much power you actually have. like how much power you actually have and how much power you actually wielding, you know, and how much influence you actually have, because there's a lot of people that have come to you in dire straits and you've coached them throughout this. So you have a lot of people on your side, right? Meanwhile, you have the toxic, usually toxic masculine guy that's just like, rah, 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 rah. And it's just like, you got to wield some more of that power to take back power or to challenge power. Because right now I feel like we're kind of tiptoeing around that. And frankly, the only way in which to address this toxic masculine old patriarchy is to challenge it directly and call out the BS that it is. And then also point out, and if you need to do this all the way to the CEO or the board of directors, be like, this strategy is why we have been in lawsuits. This strategy is why we have been like in such a stressful environment where so many people have left. And just to put a fine point on this, SHRM just did a study in October of 2019, $223 billion, billion with a B, were lost from Fortune 500 companies alone due to a toxic person just in the last 5 years. And these are the companies that are willing to admit that a toxic person was there. So this is costing us real money, you know? Mm-hmm. And we have to ask ourselves, why do we keep celebrating the brilliant jerk? Because even though they're bringing in a ton of revenue, they're causing a lot of people to quit.
So obviously this is a conversation we could have for 8 hours. I mean, as we've kind of just quickly unpacked the complexity of all of this, how it intertwines with what's happening in regards to race and Black Lives Matter and that DEI work that's being called out, what's been happening for years, because we keep referencing 1950s. But I wonder if we could end on this question. So let's talk about the organization that doesn't have HR, who's been around for 10 to 15 years, never has had HR, had someone who kind of helped do paperwork and says that they're successful and that they don't need that, because they are kind of this festering ground for a lot of this. Is that kind of weird leadership bromance that's happening internally. What would you say to them if they happen to be listening? Or, and I know a lot of my colleagues, these are those great opportunities that show themselves up. These companies are all of a sudden like, all right, yeah, I'll give HR a whirl. And so they're walking into these organizations. What do you say to the leader there who's like, I don't know if HR really has any value. I just want someone to take care of that woman stuff.
Yeah.
And what do you maybe want to say to that HR professional who's getting ready to walk in there, and that's the leader that they have to partner with and what they're going to be walking into?
So I'd first say to the person that's doing all free willy, you know, free neil, you know, like, hey, it's not that big of a deal. Hey, I'm Uber. Why would I need an HR group? You know, just like just putting, well, not only are you putting yourself in a predicament where you eventually will have a lawsuit, you know, that's just a given. That's because you're just trying to skate by. But more importantly, you should really ask your team, how psychologically safe is this place? How comfortable do you feel to work here? And if you can't even ask that question, then you already know the answer that this is not, you're not able to address these issues. And the fact is if you can't navigate these hard conversations and you're not good at them, and a lot of like leaders are not, then you need to bring someone in that actually can. Because that is how you actually keep people. Like, people will join your organization because it's super cool and you're doing a lot of great things and maybe you're changing worlds and stuff like that. But that stuff ends quick if they don't feel like you see them as an individual and you're showing up with a certain level of humanity. So you have to ask yourself, how psychologically safe is my work environment right now, especially even virtually right now? How, and if you're like, well, I don't know what that means, how many hard conversations can you have with your staff? And how many hard conversations can they have with each other? And if it's not many, you have a problem. And then for the HR individual that's coming in there, first off, Before you go in there, you need to ask all of your friends to remind you how much of a badass you are, right? And remind you how dope you are and what you actually do for organizations and what value you bring. And when you walk in there, you go, how much is, you walk in there with the confidence to be like, how much is your turnover? How much does turnover cost you per year? Oh, what if you saved half of that? What if I could save you that? Because that is an issue that you're dealing with. You know, have you had a lawsuit recently? How would you like to address that? You know, would you like to bring in more diversity? Because it seems like you've just hired all of your friends and you've had to fire some of your friends and now you're not friends with them anymore. You probably don't like doing that. What value can I bring here? And then actually even ask them, how much money would you put on this? Because to reduce turnover, to save you from a lawsuit, to help you bring in people that I actually know that can exponentially bring in revenue for this organization and make it 10 times better, what value is that? And then ask for even more than that. Because you should demand that much, because I think HR a lot of times is like neglected and they don't get paid what they really should get paid for what they do to basically keep organizations running and being the glue for that organization to stay together.
Yeah. Wonderfully said. Well, Jeff, it's always a pleasure to have any kind of conversation with you. And I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Anything final that you want to say to the listeners until next time?
It's time to end the patriarchy. And I'm not saying this, and this is a guy, right? This is a guy talking here. But it's just, I'm saying this because we have an opportunity because of this pandemic to go to a new normal. And what do we want that new normal to look like? And I believe in HR and just organizations in general, and this is why I do so much of my work at Rediscover Your Play, of like infusing play here, is like we need to show up with so much more humanity, so much more compassion, because when you do that, people work harder. Like just even in the idea of like, well, I want my staff to be productive. And why are we trying to squeeze the last remnants out of people like a Google or like Tesla or like, and instead show up with a certain level of humanity and ask ourselves like, how am I identifying the language of appreciation for each of my staff? How am I recognizing their flow work and allowing them to do the work that makes them come alive? Because frankly, that is what's gonna actually make me most successful, you know? And I keep going back to the quote from Steven Johnson, you'll find the future where people are having the most fun. The organizations that create the most psychologically safe space to have fun and be yourself are the ones that are gonna thrive in this new normal, and everyone else is gonna be left behind.
Yeah, it's time that we make sure that our spaces are psychologically safe, not just physically safe. Well, thank you so much, Jeff. It has truly been a pleasure chatting with you today, as always. And thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Heart of It podcast. If you loved it, share it with your friends. Leave a review on your favorite listening platform. It would do wonders for supporting us and the work that we do here. And I will talk to you next time.
Take care.
Especially in these uncertain times, addressing the pain points that are getting in the way of your staff doing their best work is vital right now. Rediscover Your Play helps businesses address some of their biggest challenges through experiential play. Whether it is dealing with toxicity on your team, cutting through office politics so staff can focus on the work that makes them thrive, creating a more inclusive work environment, or confronting their inner critic. Much of this work is typically avoided in the workplace, but tackling it head-on in a tangible, play-oriented way will not only inspire your staff to be more productive, but also help them find more fulfillment in their work. To set up a discovery call to see if Jeff can help your organization, visit rediscoveryourplay.com.